Janae and Gola Jr., the podcast.
We're still here. Very happy for it. You know, I have two favorite fantasies. Let me not get myself in trouble really quick.
Whoa.
Okay, the first one, I don't know. We were so swamped with football. We were so swamped with hoops, okay? One of my favorite fantasies is a song by Mariah Carey, and she debuted her new single at the U.S. Open, which was really cool. But my other favorite fantasy is here, right here on Janae and Gola Jr. We are on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. My favorite fantasy now, besides Mariah Carey in that single, which to me is in like top 10 all time, is fantasy football. So I was super excited to get my first lineup going. And I really was, I was looking at my bench. Cam Newton's on the bench. Ooh. Obviously, it makes sense, though. It makes sense, though, because I have Lamar Jackson as my starting QB. Gave me plenty of points. Despite all of that, I'm still blaming Chubb because, yeah, we Browns. Come on, guys.
See, you've settled in nicely to fantasy football fandom because everyone, like, it is our sole lot in life to come in and complain about whatever didn't happen. Not the fact that you have Lamar Jackson, who in year two looks like he's playing football seeing only zeros and ones. Dude has unlocked the Matrix in a major way, and he won the MVP already last season. Like, everyone should be terrified. No, you focus on the right things like we all do in fantasy, which is what did I not have my team doing for me? So
no, exactly. And I was sort of disappointed because, you know, I put my fantasy team on Twitter, at Janae321, at Mike Lola Jr., and everyone's like, wow, you're stacked. You must be in an eight-person league. I was like, nah, we in 12, okay? We in 12.
First of all.
Exactly, first of all. But to me, I was looking forward to seeing how Cam debuted. You talked about Lamar Jackson and how people have expectations after winning MVP. How will his team, the Ravens, sort of jump over the hump. Now we also have expectations, you know, in New England with Cam Newton. And he really delivered, especially, you know, game one. They took down the Miami Dolphins 21-11. And when I was watching this, I was like, oh, snap. I love seeing it from my lens, considering I'm an athlete that's dealt with many injuries. And to come back, and we've all seen, like, I don't know if this is normal Cam Newton, but he seems even bigger than normal Cam Newton. He came ready to take some hits and some punches, and he really did. He literally punched the ball into the end zone and got that, you know, start off TD, which was really, really cool. But what was your impression on New England to start, especially with this new age, new quarterback, new style, new vibe with Cam?
If New England can take exactly what they did to start the second half and replicate that over the course of the season, I think they're going to be successful because you saw the perfect marriage of both worlds. Deep play action shots on early downs to Julian Edelman in the middle of the field, and then you get down to the red zone and you take the wheels off on that one. The training wheels come off and it is Cam time down there. Josh McDaniels seemed to be salivating at the prospect of what he could do for his quarterback, and it showed, Janae, because we had a lot of mosts in this game. 15 rushing attempts, the most ever by a Patriots quarterback in a game. 75 rushing yards by Cam Newton, the most by a Patriots quarterback since 1977. Overall, they rushed 42 times for 217 yards, both their most in a season over under Bill Belichick. The only thing that we had on the opposite end was 19 pass attempts, the fewest by a Patriots starting quarterback since Jacoby Brissett did it in week 3 of 2016. And obviously, Jacoby Brissett came into that one in markedly different fashion than the former MVP and Cam Newton. So I thought there was a lot of good to take from that. And it was great because you got to do it against an opponent, the Dolphins, that, yeah, spent a bunch of money in their secondary. But ultimately, we don't expect them to challenge even a Patriots team that's been gutted by people defecting for COVID-19 reasons this offseason and the amount of talent that walked out in free agency.
Yeah, and after hearing like all these, obviously everyone's really excited. I think people sort of hold their breath and like, oh, it's Miami. Like, not so sure what our expectations are. Is it the first half version of a team or is it the second half version of the team from last season? But, you know, you had a lot of good nuggets. And one of my favorite, though, is because we're hearing a lot of talk of like, will he be able to sustain this type of brute force, the physicality? And Cam is now up to 60 career rushing touchdowns, which is 17 more than any other NFL quarterback. The idea that he'd be able to sustain, I think he knew walking into the season he'd have to get back to what he's good at. But now it's such a different look. It's such a different vibe for New England that I think a lot of people will, it'll take some time for them to just adjust to this new normal.
It is a new normal. It's Chinay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Commercial is proud to partner with the small business experts at SCORE. Find a mentor today at score.org. Cam was on the top end of things. Coming up next, we'll see some of the biggest disasters in the NFL and figure out who is on the losingest end of some of the losingest games we saw this weekend. But you mentioned Cam Newton. It is going to be new for a lot of people. They're not used to any of these things we just mentioned in New England. But if you ask him, he's picking up right where he left off.
Yeah, it was relatively... You know, picking up right where I remember the game to be, so to speak.
And he is used to all of those things. He is used to being a part. I said, if you had told people in 2020 you'd be watching the Patriots quarterback run a quarterback power read option play, I'm sure people would have fallen out of their chairs thinking about Tom Brady trying to pull that stuff off. But it wasn't the only difference. For him, it was different for his head coach, Bill Belichick, who now gets the split and now is a part of what we're going to do every week during this season. Look at Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and see who got the better results and then judge the two's entire life work accordingly, Chinay.
It's a versus battle. Is that what you're telling me? Is this a new versus battle, Cam Newton, Tom Brady?
The versus battle of Cam Newton and Tom Brady, the versus battle of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in this, it's
Arians,
all deadly.
Belichick? Like, it's endless.
I feel like Bruce Arians would thrive in that situation, by the way, the Kangol hat and everything. He just seems tailor-made for that, right?
That is true.
It is true. You know what else is true? We have to parse through a lot of the coach speak around here. We got an epic one from Bill Belichick this weekend. So, Cliff, why don't we hit him with our job here as two athletes. You're a current athlete. I'm a former athlete. We like to break down what coaches are saying and
Translate.
What they're actually trying to tell you guys, and so we do it in a little something called coach speak.
What some people say ain't always what they mean.
We all have a job to do. We're gonna have to count on everybody to do their job.
Consider this a translation.
I think we're working at it, and we'll see where we're at on Sunday.
Coach speak with Chinay and Golic Jr.
Now, Chinay, normally we're dealing with the mixed messages and the hidden agendas that coaches sometimes bring to prep, because you know this. Your coach, Derek Fisher, I'm sure there are times with the L.A. Spark where he's trying to send a message to the team with what he says to the media, right?
Absolutely.
Bill Belichick.
Well, actually, he doesn't say much, so he's very much like Bill in this.
And that's good because Bill seemed pretty direct when he talked to the media. Listen to the question, everything that went into this, and then the response they got from Bill Belichick.
Bill, you are obviously someone who has seen a lot of football in your day, been involved in a lot of games. What was the atmosphere like in the stadium without fans there? Can you compare it to anything else that you've experienced in your football life?
Practice.
There you go. That is the straightest talk. Coach speak is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports. Talking about practice, Chinay. Not a game, practice.
This ain't in Philly, okay, Cliff? That ain't in Philly? I was laughing at this, just at the bluntness of his response. But you know what's funny? Like, we went into Sunday knowing that, you know, I think Adam Schefter had the report that, hey, they're going to be pumping in, like, you know, specific sound of specific teams. And I was watching, I was like, man, I forget, like, if you don't have those crowd shots, you feel like you're watching another normal game. But I wonder what it felt like from the players, because if they're not pumping that sound in, it will sound like practice. The game, practice.
And Chinay, I'm very curious because every once in a while, I caught a low angle shot during the Sunday Night Football game between the Rams and the Cowboys, and it like freaked me out because it looked like they were playing post-apocalypse, that big, empty, new palace of a stadium
with
nobody inside it. And I just thought of trying to replicate any sort of juice in that. That's why having players like Jamal Adams has, the Seattle does in Jamal Adams, guys that are going to bring that energy, are probably such an added boost even now more than ever, because it looked eerie. Like, your sister's inside the bubble. I'm curious what she had to say about playing in an environment like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be wild.
I remember when she started, I asked her, I was like, hey, how does it feel? She's like, you know, people keep asking us if there's a home court advantage. I was like, home court is literally who gets announced first. Other than that, it's quiet. It's awkward. But you get used to it. You know why? Because WNBA players play all across the world in a lot of different places. So we're used to performing under that situation. But that's not the case, especially, and I'm going to, you know, make the connection to the NBA and their bubble, just because you see a Clippers team that could use a boost of energy, and you know, it affects all players in similar ways, whether you're in the NBA, the WNBA, or in the NFL. Even though, yes, the facility, I mean, $5 billion? Mm. You made the connection to Dallas. For those who don't know, Westworld is like the whole world. It's like the world, I don't know, it's like the world on technological steroids.
Yes.
And so,
accurate.
I thought it was hilarious, and I think I came back at your tweet with, like, who did I say? Dak is Dolores.
Yeah, Dolores.
We'll see if she, like, has
there.
A short.
Yeah, we saw that. By the way, there were a couple of plays that looked like Madden glitches last night. But Chinay, I'm glad you mentioned that home field advantage, because the other thing we talked about in the NBA bubble was the advantage almost, it seemed like, early on for jump shooters without that surrounding environment. It seemed like jump shooters were having a pretty good go at it and a pretty good look because of all of those things. How about this for the NFL Week 1? Obviously, two games remaining with Monday Night Football's doubleheader tonight, the Steelers and the Giants, and then the Denver Broncos and the Tennessee Titans in the late game. With two games left, the league-wide QBR through Week 1 is 60.3. That's the highest total QBR in Week 1 since 2006. Teams averaged 23 first downs per game. That was the most since 2001. And so without a lot of that outside noise, without the difficulty on third down, we've seen a lot of execution very early in a way that I was going to be very interested to see. So it's you get down into areas like the red zone, third down, all of these things that when you're not dealing with that home field advantage can be very, very different.
Hey, well, we're going to reap the benefits, especially with more TD, so I'm here for it.
Absolutely. I'm an offensive player. I don't give a damn about what goes on those defensive side of the balls. They can have their difficult defensive meetings. We're going to hold it down here having fun and scoring points. But speaking of fun, coming up next, anything but for a three-pack of teams in the NFL on the misery index, who ranked the highest after some of the most stunning endings we saw? We'll get to that next. It's Chenay and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chenay and Golic Jr., the podcast.
We all know November is going to be important this year. Everyone's got to write a duty as part of democracy to go out and support the toasted cheesy chalupa that's going to debut at Taco Bell that month. It's Chenay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. Chenay, did you see the Taco Bell coming out with a wine that I must try?
I saw it via your timeline that Taco Bell's coming out with wine. How does this happen? I don't understand how they decide to pivot into wine.
You know what? I think they just decide that they've got so much to give that the world needs a jalapeno noir, which is apparently the wine that they're going with in this situation. Now, minor detail, it's currently only available in Canada, but I'm hoping with that rollout in November that they do the right thing for this great nation and unleash that wine upon the world. We're going
to
need
My question is, how long is the drive from Bristol to Canada? Because I feel like if there's someone to do it, you might just road trip for that reason.
Yeah, hopefully we're allowed back in Canada at that point. That would be
I forgot. You're right. We're trapped.
That would be a nice reward for doing right between now and then. So let's get on it, because I need to try Taco Bell wine.
Right?
It's Chenay and Golic Jr. reminding you to check out ESPN Audio at home by telling Alexa to play news from ESPN. ESPN Audio at Home is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really goes, from customization and service to financial assistance. Mercedes-Benz Vans are ready for anything. All right, it is 8 hours, apparently, from here to Canada, and so that feels more than doable in the name of, again, jalapeno.
Someone's
noir.
Done it. I have a feeling you've done it, or you will do it.
Listen, where there's a will, there's a way, and my will when it comes to the fourth meal is unbreakable.
That is fourth meal. You're right. That is an elite fourth meal. I haven't had Taco Bell in a long time. Same, I haven't had a McDonald's in a long time. I don't know if I'm going to break the streak anytime soon, though.
Listen.
But maybe for some wine.
You're an athlete in the prime of your life right now. You're still a WNBA star. And so you've got time before you can sink into the mediocrity of life like me and just pump your body full of those things.
LeBron drinks wine all the time. It's part of his regimen. So I feel like it's okay for me as a current athlete to dabble. But, you know, I'm a rookie out there. I'm not a vet in them streets when it comes to wines.
That is true. So we'll work on getting you there, and we'll try and work on figuring out who maybe lost the hardest this weekend. We've talked so much about the debut for Tom Brady, Philip Rivers and his new team, Cam Newton in New England, and all the things that in a lot of places went really well. The Seattle Seahawks look like they could be one of the best teams in football. The Chiefs and the Ravens are a cut above everybody else. Lamar Jackson is a bona fide star. And then there's what happened with these three teams. The Dallas Cowboys, the Detroit Lions, and the Cincinnati Bengals. Chenay, you saw as well as I did three very devastating endings. For anyone that wasn't aware, Dallas Sunday Night Football, their game against the Rams, ended with an offensive pass interference call against Michael Gallup, and then CeeDee Lamb on a 4th-and-3 catching the ball a yard short and being tackled a yard short. The Lions game ended dropped pass by rookie running back DeAndre Swift that would have been for the go-ahead touchdown on a potential game-winning drive, and instead led them to a loss. And the Cincinnati Bengals had an offensive pass interference call on what would have been an A.J. Green touchdown after a 2-minute drive for the ages by your rookie number one overall pick and Joe Burrow, only to be undone by a missed field goal. So, Chenay, as you look back and think back on all these games, which one of these hurt your soul in the deepest place?
Probably DeAndre Swift, just because being a rookie, like, your first game is such a precious thing on your mind. Okay. And when I think about that situation, I remember I was watching it and you mentioned the Cowboys. You talk about how the Cowboys, you know, that was more so like a flip of a coin, a toss of a coin by the official whether or not to call it. So that's sort of like 50-50. And you think about the Bengals. I think the Bengals fans are more so happy that Joe like did his thing. My favorite takeaway was I think did he rush his first touchdown?
His first touchdown was on a QB draw. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Athletic. Yeah, and I loved it because my favorite part was how his teammates responded, like how they turned and like you saw how many people were like so excited. There is hope and there is a belief that Joe is their guy. So yeah, it stinks for the kickers. And I have another question for a kicker after this, but the worst to me was Swift, just because I think about my first game. You have all these tremendous, amazing memories. You finally make it to the pros. You have a position, you know, you're in position to like change, you know, literally win the game. And when we watched it, it seemed like it was all good. And as he turned, that's when it started slipping away. And then you do that whole like pancake slide, like, and then you stay on the ground for a second too long because it just reality hits you. That to me broke my heart, especially because Detroit, you know, we've had some pretty high expectations, I think, especially for Stafford and company, and sort of like them being able to notch off a win. You know, we sort of penciled that one kind of in, especially with the quarterback situation with the Bears. So I was like, oh, this is a great moment. Like Detroit, like everyone talks about it. Jalen Rose, my dog in audio, Tarika Foster-Brasby, like everyone's like, Detroit, like we need. And for them to lose, there's so many people that like were like, it's okay. Like in Detroit, we don't have feelings. Like we don't have feelings anymore.
That's the thing is like we all tried to will Detroit to be a thing. I was super high on them. We're going to talk to Mina Kimes in a few minutes, who was on the Detroit preseason bandwagon. And all of us failed to listen to the Detroit Lions fans in our lives who tried to tell us that misery is the only way and it is all that they know. So I feel like it's shame on us in that situation because like I was gutted for DeAndre Swift, who I thought was the best running back in this draft, who catches that ball 10 out of 10 times in Athens, Georgia. And in this situation, it just slipped out, unfortunately.
Literally. Now I have a question, though, because going back to the Bengals and Burrow, the kick. I was just wondering, like, okay, yeah, we all love to point to the kicker because it's funny. You think about football. Football kick, like, kicks sort of like, oh, you expect them to go well, but when they don't, they get, like, heavy blame. But I know in the bubble, the situation has to feel different for a kicker. The same way in basketball, if you're on the free throw line, you're used to hearing the crowd go, boo, or all that jazz that's happening on the side. In these arenas and these stadiums and these environments, it's got to be, I don't know if I can say that word.
Oh, yeah.
I can say hella?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, it's got to be hella awkward to be there when it's largely quiet. And then, you like, if I'm on the team, I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to disturb them. And you know that, you know, the other team is not going to say anything. So it's going to be crickets. These kickers, it's, you know, I'd rather hear something than not hear something. And I feel like that sort of makes their job even that much harder, especially now in these strange environments with the NFL.
It is so funny. Anything that's different is seen as a distraction, is seen as something that could throw you off. Because I can tell you, you work overtime in practice to try and create adverse situations, create noise, create distraction during practice to keep it from being quiet because you want them to be used to a game. And now having to kick with the weight of all of that, I've no doubt changes that. Kicking is such a mental portion of football. But I have to say, and shout out to their kicker on this one.
Okay.
Randy Bullock is the Bengals kicker on that. In a moment there, chance to tie the game up for Cincinnati at the end of this one. Your rookie number one overall pick quarterback goes up there. And you notice, after he misses the kick, what does he immediately do? Reaches down for the calf. Now, I hope that he is not seriously injured. I hope that he can come back from this because I want everyone to be healthy and succeed. That being said, if I miss that kick, you are going to have to cart me off the field. I am going to grab my knee so viciously on that one. In that situation, it's got to be an injury or bust on that one. And they go and take me into the MRI and everything's, whoa, surprise, surprise, this is magically healed. Look at God. But best believe the vet move of the week was grabbing that calf after the field goal so people would instantly go, oh, man, he's hurt, and not, oh, he missed the kick.
And quick point, Tarika, who is I assumed was a Detroit Lions fan, is texting me right now saying that she's a Colts fan. But I'm like, I understand why you're a Colts fan now.
Yeah.
Your main team made you go pick up a side piece team. So I understand.
It is definitely like that sometimes. Speaking of someone's main team, though, Mina Kimes might be the happiest person in this building now based on what happened yesterday. We'll tell you why when she joins us next after this word from DraftKings. See, there's no better place to get in on all the gridiron action than with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. Just pick your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Download the DraftKings app now. Do it. Use code CJR. And for a limited time, new users are going to get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes this week. I play with my family every weekend. I did not do great, so really got to redouble the effort this time around. But you can get back in on it. Don't miss out on the action in week two. Use promo code CJR only at DraftKings and make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Back after this, it's Shanae and Golic Jr.
Shanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
I feel like there's no greater feeling or no better validation for someone who's picked a song than when you hear that little breathless moment that I just heard from you. Like, you know, as soon as your song cuts on, you've done well with the aux chord.
I am telling you, Cliff, can I get an ELE from you right now?
ELE, everybody love everybody.
Okay, that's a good start. How about a CLC? How about that?
Not yet. We're not on that level yet. We're going to get there soon, eventually, one day.
Everybody loves everybody. The show motto: Chip loves Chip loves. Wow,
Clifford loves Shanae. It's a, he said.
Oh
yo,
no!
The reason why I was so turned is Cliff. Oh, that no. is my favorite song of all time. That's my number one. Outstanding. That's it.
I'm sorry. You had a great moment right here, Shanae, and I completely botched it by ruining everyone's names.
It's okay.
There's no other way to save this. Shanae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
No,
ESPN
I'll save
News.
It for you. All right, I'll save it for you because if Cliff and I were in a work marriage, which we are, he's sort of, I don't know what he is, honestly, in the equation. Maybe uncle, I think we decided. Or no, we wanted him like cousin or something. Our names combined, Chiff. Shanae and Cliff. Chiff.
I appreciate you trying to be so kind and help me out on this one. But as is often the case, I'm going to drag us down. So to lift us up, our Never. ESPN NFL analyst, Mina Kimes, joins us now on the show, Pennzoil Performance Line. You can also check out her podcast, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, wherever you get your podcast. And Mina, I would have to imagine it's a pretty emotional Monday morning now that the Seahawks have decided that modern offense is something they're going to major in.
You know, I saw that chart. Teams passing in neutral situations. I saw Seattle second in the NFL, and it was almost like I like staring at the sun, honestly. Like, it was like I had to shield my eyes because it was such a beautiful sight to behold. Yes, the Seattle coaches decided to let Russell Wilson cook, and he gave us a whole meal. That's all I have to say.
Here for it. Here for it. Main entree. Mina, you know, it's funny. A short little question before I get to my real question. Russell Wilson, I found out, you know, randomly, and this probably blows a lot of people's minds, has never received a vote for league MVP in any of his eight or so seasons. I think it's eight seasons so far. Is this the year that he gets one at least MVP vote, Mina?
Well, I'll tell you what. That offense is stacked enough to make it happen. Some issues along the offensive line, as is the norm in Seattle, but he's got quite a nice group of skill players there. But he's also got some competition, Shanae. From week one, it's funny. Like, we spend so much time analyzing these teams, who's going to rise, who's going to fall, and the best quarterbacks in football remain the best quarterbacks in football. Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, and Lamar Jackson. And I'll just give some flowers to Lamar because I watched that game last night after Sunday Night Football and all of his offensive possessions, and I think that might have been his finest game as a quarterback, which is saying a lot. He made throws yesterday against Cleveland that I didn't even know he had in his bag. And so if he continues to play at that level, it's going to be a difficult competition.
Mina, this is music to my ears because guess who I have as my quarterback in fantasy?
Oh, if you have Lamar, that's good news.
Let's go. Let's go. You know, big picture here. I know we'll get to the minutia soon, especially with the controversial calls. But what's your biggest takeaway from week one in the NFL on Sunday?
That it's the Chiefs and the Ravens and everyone else, honestly. And that's not ruling out the Seahawks, who are great, or the Saints, who are very balanced. I think the NFC, though, is more wide open. We saw San Francisco, a favorite, losing. Dallas losing. The NFC West is terrifying. But in the AFC, I mean, we'll see what Pittsburgh has tonight because I think that's a team with some Super Bowl upside as well with that defense. But Baltimore and Kansas City are the class of that conference, and it's not particularly close.
Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst, with us here on Shanae and Golic Jr. And Mina, you've talked about the best, the upper echelon quarterbacks. We saw two of the oldest squaring off in Tampa Bay and New Orleans the other day. And I think we all saw a lot of the same things, a couple of arms that seemed to finally be showing signs of their age. Of the two quarterbacks that we saw in that matchup, who are you more concerned about going into this 2020 season?
Drew Brees. I mean, he looked like Drew Brees end of season last year in the playoffs, and which has been a couple years now, but he started off stronger. So to see him start with that kind of, wet noodle arm performance is not promising. And the thing is, Drew Brees knows his limitations, but he's been able to overcome them by being such a cerebral quarterback. Obviously, he's been in the NFL forever. And being accurate at the short and intermediate levels, but he wasn't even terribly accurate last night. I mean, even seeing a 60% completion percentage next to Drew Brees' name, that felt strange. That felt as strange as seeing Seattle passing the ball so much. So if I'm New Orleans, I'm a little bit worried. I said on NFL Live today, it almost has like a 2015 Broncos feel where that defense, which I don't think is as good as the 2015 Broncos, although they're very good, they're going to have to do the brunt of the legwork if this team is going to live up to its expectations.
Well, if we're going to talk about expectations, Mina, it seems only right that we talk about the Dallas Cowboys who failed to live up to them last night. And a lot of that is getting focused on the end of the game, certainly. The offensive pass interference call that we all love to debate. But I'm curious from your standpoint, the fourth down call, fourth and three there, a lot of people weighing the decision to go for it there versus the actual play. Where do you fall on that end game sequence of events from Dallas as an offensive play calling standpoint?
Totally fine with the decision to go for it. Don't even hate the play call upon rewatching it a few times. Execution was the problem. But I'm angrier at the third and sixth call, running Ezekiel Elliott at Aaron Donald with the gut of that offense, which is something you saw Dallas do, I thought, far too many times, running Ezekiel Elliott early downs. You know how I feel about that, Mike. When on the opposite side of the ball, Sean McVay was making hay of those Dallas linebackers. I just think the Cowboys got outcoached, which is disappointing because of the firepower they have on that offense and what I and many others thought would be an explosive unit before this season.
Mina, one more before we let you go, and talking about coaching and the application of new players coming in certain surroundings. Cam Newton, in week one, goes out and gets a win against the Miami Dolphins. We talked so much about it this offseason, exhaustingly so. What did you actually make of the first round of Cam in a Patriots uniform?
It was like everything we expected in terms of, the play action, the misdirection, the short passing game, but then dialed up to 11, or rather, dialed up to 15, which is, I think, how many times he carried the ball. I didn't expect him to carry it that many times, but that's what Miami was giving them, and if there's anything I know about New England, it's that they will take advantage of matchups. So I'm very curious to see how Seattle responds on defense versus that offense, and whether Cam has to throw more. He did look sharp, I thought, on slants, but he wasn't asked to do a ton, and I don't think those skill players are very good. So I'll be curious to see if this Patriots offense, which did look a lot of fun in week one, can evolve.
You can follow on Twitter at Mina Kimes. Check her out on NFL Live here at 4 Eastern every week, or check out the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny wherever you get your podcast. Mina, we appreciate the time.
Thanks, Mina.
Appreciate you guys. ELE.
Everybody love
See,
everybody.
She gets it, Cliff.
Mina understands how we operate around here. It's going to be very interesting to watch her beloved Seahawks going forward. That's, biggest stock up of the weekend based on how they performed, in my mind, the Seattle Seahawks. So, a lot to look at in there, but we said and we knew going into this weekend that how the NFL addressed social injustice and the way its players were going to go about protesting was going to make headlines. We'll talk about a couple of the biggest ones that we saw next. It's Shanae Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.
Shanae Angola Jr., the podcast.
All right. All eyes were on the NFL this Sunday, but it didn't just stop with the play on the field. Shanae Ogwumike here with Mike Golic Jr. here on Shanae and Golic Jr. We are on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And as I said earlier, Mike, it wasn't just the final scores. It was actually the moments before that we were also following. And when we talk about these moments before, it was primarily around the anthem, the national anthem, and also what is commonly known as the Black National Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing, that continuing to be played before games. But we saw some interesting things when it comes to addressing social justice. We saw end racism in the end zone of multiple teams. We saw also, I think there, there's insignias on the back of helmets as well.
Yeah, sort of like the NBA that had a list of messages that you could have on the back of the jersey. The NFL had a list of statements that players could choose to put on the sticker on the back of their helmets. So you saw some of those over the weekend as well. Yeah,
yeah, I remember a couple was like, it starts with us. I think that was Dax. There were a number of those statements on the back of helmets as well. Frank Reich was the only head coach to kneel during the anthem. During the Seahawks-Falcons game, they kneeled during the opening kick, which was supposed to be a display of unity. And it was coordinated by Russell Wilson, obviously, and quarterback Matt Ryan. The Bills, the Jaguars, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Texans, the Cardinals, the Eagles, the Packers all stayed in their locker rooms during the national anthem. And interestingly, in Minnesota, which I thought this was a very touching nod, the Vikings honored George Floyd and other victims of racial violence by having his family present there before the game. So we saw a lot of different displays in which, you know, the players are trying to show that they are aware of what's going on and they're trying to show solidarity, most importantly. But how impactful do you think all of those gestures and displays were?
Yeah, I think, quite honestly, with a lot of the NFL, we saw the action and the impact happen before, when the Bucks shut down really the entire sports world for a day by refusing to take the court. And we saw NFL teams respond, not taking the field, the statements from teams like the Baltimore Ravens. Because I'm going to be honest, Janae, this weekend there was so much talk about bot Twitter coming in saying, I'm done watching the NFL, I'm boycotting. And we've already seen some of the ratings are higher than they'd ever been. People were so genuinely excited to have football back that I feel like this was part of the fear that we've heard from a lot of athletes, that a return to play and a resumption of that normalcy might, you know, overwhelm or, you know, drown out the message a little bit. I think players have been clear throughout this offseason, but I think for that one day, if you're talking about this being the dominant talking point, I don't think it was the case.
Yeah, I think people are finally having the realization that this is something that's not going to end. Just because the bots are out there saying that, hey, I want my football without politics or political stances, this is going to be here to stay. Like, you put that on your helmet, it's going to be there for probably the entire season. You're going to see more actions. I think the thing is like, now, you know, it's tough to realize that as great as, you know, shows of solidarity are, that's not the actionable item that I think these athletes care about. They care about invoking and creating change in their communities, and also having their teams understand the sense of urgency it is for them to push those messages out. And you're right. Like, okay, yeah. Not craziest, but most extreme sense of a scenario is probably the Bucks when, you know, they're going up against the Magic. But also see what happened afterward. Like, they stayed in the locker room talking to all the state legislature and leadership there. And then even so, like, you know, we saw quickly within the NBA them deciding to activate all of their arenas into voting places, right? So I think those are the actionable items that the players are looking forward to, not necessarily these displays of unity and solidarity. I think it's more, we're going to see more demands from the players to sort of get their ownership, to sort of put their money where their mouth is, and understand that this is not just something that can be solved by kneeling once or twice. There are some realities to the situation for these players.
Yeah, and I think it's also worth reminding people that outside of Jacksonville, there weren't fans in the stands this weekend, and we saw the one instance where there were fans in the stands when Houston took on Kansas City. What happened in that instance with the boos that were heard in that situation? And so I think without the immediate reaction, it certainly makes it more difficult to digest in a lot of this. But I think the hunger for football to be back in general was so overwhelming. It's going to be about the follow-up now. Frank Reich was the only coach to kneel, and I think the only person on the Indianapolis sideline. It was a very jarring image to see him being the lone person kneeling in that lineup. I hope he was asked about it after. Like, this is the other part of this, is we saw NBA, WNBA players, athletes all over using their time with the media to address these things. And that follow-up, using that platform, is going to be just as big a part of this, because this isn't 4 years ago where this action, because of a lot of reasons, is maybe seen as abrasive in that spot. It's
exactly.
still, we saw it. There's enough blowback to consider it a protest, but it is something that has been more normalized, has been more adopted around the league than it was when Colin Kaepernick and others first took a knee.
Yeah, I think a couple years ago, if you took a knee, I think you were really thinking that your career could be in jeopardy based on public perception, but that has come a long way. But perception is not, you know, the thing that can save us here. It's actionable items and actually going in and doing creating the change that you want, using the collaboration, using the solidarity that you see. It's like, how many people, you know, we have countless, how many people are on a roster now? Because I know the numbers are up now, especially considering the COVID situation, but now you have strength in numbers. And I think athletes are realizing they don't have to make this decision by themselves. You know, we can all make a show of solidarity, but after that, what are we going to say? And you brought it up. You know, throughout this football, basketball, playoffs, all that stuff, one thing that we've missed was Naomi Osaka got asked after the U.S. Open saying that, hey, like, you know, what did you intend to do, especially with having the masks of all those victims of racial violence? And she responded saying, no, the question is, what do you talk about when you see this? And I think that's sort of posing the question, not on us and our gestures, but also what are you taking away from this that makes us better for it?
Yeah, the continued response to this from everyone on the outside, the media, the fans, and all those alike, going to be the story going forward, and we'll keep an eye on and monitor that. But as we switch back to the field, coming up next, we'll figure out who should be hitting the panic meter 1 week into the NFL season.
Already
burn it all down. That's next. It's Shanae and Golic Jr.
Must win.